anything's possible. If you want to try something new, put yourself out there. And I would just encourage you to try it. Nothing that's worth something is going to be easy. You're going to have to put the work in. You're going to have to educate yourself. But accept that new challenge. If you become burnt out from your job and you want to try something different, there's no reason for you to stay unhappy. There's a lot of different job opportunities out there, a lot of opportunities for you to just advance yourself and grow your skill set. And I'm so happy that I did that for myself.
Welcome to The Exit Interview, a podcast for Black educators, where we, Dr. Asia and Kev, delve into the crucial but often overlooked conversations surrounding the retention of Black educators. While the spotlight shines in recruiting efforts, we turn our focus to the stories of those who've left the field of teaching. The Exit Interview aims to spark dialogue among school district administrators, school unions, families, educators, and anyone else passionate about fostering a more inclusive and supportive educational environment. Join us as we elevate these narratives, shedding light on the challenges faced by Black educators, and provide invaluable insights for the future of education. Welcome to The Exit Interview. Welcome back to another episode of The Exit Interview, a podcast for Black educators with your host, Dr. Asia Lyons. Super excited today. I'm always excited about the podcast. I'm always telling people like this is going to be so great. And I'm so excited about the whole thing because I always am. Today, we have Aaliyah Martin on our podcast and she's going to share her story. She reached out via LinkedIn or actually through our messaging system. And what you all can do as well is reach out to our messaging system and said, hey, I'm interested in being on the podcast. And so here we are. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, it looks like looking through your bio, you're local to Denver. We'd love to hear your story. Tell us all about yourself. Yeah, share. How did you decide to become an educator? What was that story like for you?
Yeah, so I am a Denver, Colorado native. I attended East High School, graduated back in 2009. After I graduated, I ended up going to UNC for my undergraduate degree. And when I started there, I started majoring in pre-dental because my family really wanted me to become a dentist. Looking back, hindsight, I kind of wish I would have stuck to it. I would have been a baller by now. But at the time, I honestly wasn't too confident in that. And then I was taking a lot of science classes, chemistry and biology, and I just really wasn't doing that well in them. So I think I kind of lost my confidence with that. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to continue sticking that out. So I changed my major over to human services. And at that time, I was actually working at Wells Fargo. I worked there all throughout my undergrad as a lead teller. And I really enjoyed working there because I worked with a lot of my classmates. It was always a really fun time. But I wasn't necessarily interested in pursuing a career in baking. But anyway, I ended up meeting this super dope white dude that worked there, that would come there to do deposits for his nonprofit. His name was Mark. And he would come and make deposits for his, he worked for a nonprofit that provided educational services to refugee students and their families. And I would talk to him a lot about his job and he really seemed to enjoy it. And he was super passionate about it too. And we were able to just continue connecting and he actually invited me to come shadowing with him just so I could learn more about his job. I was like, I just changed my major over to human services. So I would, and you're a social worker. He was a social worker. So I would like to learn more about what you do. And so I spent a lot of time just job shadowing him. And he really introduced me to the field of social work at UNC at the time. They did not have a social work program. So human services was the closest thing that was most closely aligned to that. But honestly, he really just opened the door for me wanting to work with young people and their families. And I gained an interest in mentorship because I saw what it had done for me while I was spending a lot of time with Mark. So for me, mentorship is really critical. I think we all need mentors and I wish that I would have had one earlier on, but I'm so grateful that I did have one. So once I graduated and I ended up moving back to Denver and landed a job in behavioral health treatment facility for youth. And I quickly learned that that was not the type of job or the type of the sector of social work that I wanted to do that takes a really strong individual and the mental health piece. It was just a lot for me. And so I really wanted to gain a job where I was still able to work with youth, but more in a mentoring type of capacity rather than therapeutic. And one of my friends had just got hired on with the Department of Family and Community Engagement as a program coordinator for Denver Public Schools. And she was like, hey, you should apply to be an AmeriCorps member. And I was thinking, like, if I do AmeriCorps, I'm going to take a huge drop in my pay. But again, I really did want to get back to the school system and like be working with youth. So I ended up taking that leap of faith and I applied to be an AmeriCorps member. I did a year of service. And then after that, I was offered a professional position within Denver Public Schools to come on as a case manager. And so I gladly took that. And from there on, my career just began to advance. Every year I was promoted into a higher position. And then after 3 years with the Department of Family and Community Engagement, I decided to transfer teams and work for the Career Connect team as a regional program coordinator for career exploration and mentorship. And this job really was right up my alley. I worked at Manio and at CEC, where I coordinated the mentoring program and a career exploration program that really just gave students exposure to different STEM-related careers that they wouldn't typically be exposed to. And I really enjoyed this role. I got to connect with students and their families, but kind of in a different way. And I built really close bonds with a lot of them. And I'm still connected with a lot of them to this day on social media. So that's really cool. But like I said, yeah, I really just like being able to expose them to non-traditional careers like engineering, manufacturing, and just different careers within the sciences. It was a really dope job and we visited some really cool places. And I was able to learn a lot in this role myself too. So that's kind of how that went.
That's a very interesting path that you took, right? A lot of folks we talk to didn't necessarily start out in education and college, but got there typically in that time. And so to hear you talk about this experience with Mark and the banking situation and this like full circle moment is really, really interesting. So how much time was that from the shadowing at the bank until the end of this particular part of your life's journey?
Until I like stopped working for Denver Public Schools?
Yeah.
Ooh, that was probably, I started working at the bank in 2010. I graduated in 2013 and I left DPS in 2019. So that was almost 10 years.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You're talking about, I want to make sure I get this right, the Department of Family and Community Engagement. So we've had Rhonda, who was working in that same department, also come on the show, and you didn't know that she had been on the show. So I think that's pretty cool. And she was still there. Obviously, you had moved on, but she was still there. And so, okay, working almost 10 years, having these great experiences, really understanding very early on the ways in which you wanted to work with youth and that not being in this more trauma-informed space, like students experiencing a lot of trauma. So doing all that work, 2019 comes, what makes you decide it's time to move on to do something different?
So ultimately, I decided to leave DPS because, well, once the leadership change took place, which made the job less enjoyable for me. And also, I needed to earn more coins, honestly. I'm not a person who likes to be micromanaged, and I'm going to get the job done. I just need to be trusted to do so. So that played a huge role. And then I just wasn't, like I said, making enough money. And during that time, I was also working towards my master's degree, and I finished in 2019. So I wanted to kind of put my degree to use. At the time, I thought I wanted to be a school social worker, but I had completed my field placement at a high school. And I found out how I was able to observe like how overworked and underpaid they were. And it just wasn't a route that I wanted to take. So I had another friend, you know, friends put you on. It's important to have a good network of friends. Yes. And she also had her MSW like me, and she got hired on with the state as a grant manager for homeless programs. So I applied and I got hired. And I was also getting a bit burnt out from the direct service aspect of work. So I think taking on a more like macro level approach to social work and being more behind the scenes, it's been a lot. It's been really refreshing for me. Plus, I'm able to work remotely now and I have a 2-year-old daughter, so it just works really well for me. I'm getting paid really well. I learned a new skill set and I'm still able to help others just in a different capacity. But I do miss working with students. So sometimes I'll pick up like a substitute job here and there just so I can be around the kids and still be somewhat immersed in like a school environment.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And shout out to social workers. Social workers, I have a good friend, Rakisha. She's a social worker. She works at CDPHE. And she talks about the care. She doesn't work with children, but she talks about the her caseload and trying to give people services and convince folks that they need to get the support that they need. And so social work in and out of schools is not easy. I can only imagine. And shout out to friends, right? Having a good network is so important because they're able to tell you, hey, come over here or do this thing or consider this thing. And it sounds like you said that mentorship piece, whether that be peer-to-peer or someone else, has been really valuable for you.
For sure. For sure. And yes, I think social workers are very undervalued, but yeah, such critical roles, like you said, inside and outside of school. Yeah. Shout out to social workers, especially Black social workers.
Yeah. Especially Black social workers. I want to point out a couple of things that you mentioned, like the coins, the micromanagement, right? And we talk a lot about people here on the podcast who come on, talk about this micromanaging piece and what that feels like, and then trying to empower themselves to speak up, but still folks are still wanting to just be right there on top of you. And that's really been a huge burden for people. And I know I typically will talk about this in a little bit, but the question that we ask is, what do you believe that school districts can do to keep Black educators? And that micromanagement piece comes up so much that there's not a space for people to be their authentic selves and to do the work in a creative but thorough way. And it's unfortunate that people, Black folks in particular, that work in education are not given the space to do what we do best.
Yeah, I would say just better pay for one, better support. I know a lot of different organizations, school districts too, are incorporating DEI practices within the framework of a lot of their departments and stuff. And I think that's important, but sometimes it feels like even in those spaces, the right people are not always in those right spaces. And it almost feels like they're just creating it to check off a box. Like we're having these ongoing repetitive conversations with no real solution. So I think they should be more solution-based rather than just, okay, this is a problem. We know the problem exists, but what are we going to do to actually solve? And I think it's also important to give people the ability to advance themselves into leadership level roles. I mean, no one wants to stay at the bottom forever, right? And whether that's just like you being a program coordinator or a supervisor, I think they should give everyone opportunities to become directors, chiefs of staff, just really to be able to climb that ladder up higher.
Yeah, all that makes sense. Also, I want to point out something you said too about transitioning out of this work, being able to work remotely, having a 2-year-old, and all those pieces. And that's really important to folks. And again, we'll get into kind of like what you're doing now in a little bit. I'd like to ask a question. As you were leaving DPS and you're applying for jobs or you found this other job, what was the response of the people who work with you? Like, how did you feel like you got a lot of support for your transition? What was that conversation like, if any at all?
You know, I think it was very supportive from my direct supervisor. He was a Black male and I have actually grew up with him. Him and my brother were really good friends. So shout out to Ez. He was very supportive about me moving on. Thought it was a great opportunity for me too. But when I was referring to leadership, I was referring to the leadership that was actually in the schools that I was at, that I actually had to work very closely with on a day-to-day basis. They were not so supportive of that. You know, I think that it was convenient for them to keep me around and kind of keep me at the bottom. So like they weren't trying to advance me or give me more opportunities, but kind of just to keep me there. So that wasn't a great feeling either, but it was nice to know that my direct supervisor was in full support of that. And I appreciate that. Like I said, he was a Black male, so I think he just wanted to see me succeed as a Black woman too. So that was love.
I love that. Shout out to him. And that guilt piece, we hear that a lot, that folks get guilted by family, by friends, by coworkers. What are you going to do? What about my favorite? It's like, what about para? Here it is. Yeah, state of Colorado, people are trying to guilt folks out of leaving because you only have 7 more years. You only have 20 more years. You can just stick it out for the para. Not to say that you don't have different benefits, but I feel like that's a tactic to keep us from thinking about doing other things and using our skills in ways that work best for us. So you kind of got into it just a little bit, but I'd like to circle back to that question of what is it that you believe that school districts can do to keep Black educators in our school spaces? Do you have, I mean, we talked a little bit about the DEI piece and doing some true DEI and not just this performative piece. We also talked about the micromanaging, But is there anything else that you'd like to add to that, that folks and our guests who can listen to this can hear to think about how they can perhaps show up differently to keep Black educators?
Yeah, just pay us more. Pay us as equal as our white counterparts are being paid, you know? Create more supportive environments for us to like just show up as our authentic selves. I think like even having like mentoring or like coaching programs for like Black staff to come on, kind of like I'm trying to explain this. Maybe like if you're a new teacher coming on board, if you can be paired with another Black teacher who might have been in the building for a couple years prior and kind of show you the ropes and get you better accustomed to things. I think like the support piece is something that's really lacking. I think a lot of us just don't feel supported and kind of feel out of place, like we just don't belong, especially if you're in a predominantly white school and you're like one of the few Black teachers. You're going to be that token Black person and it's going to be hard to show up and just especially show up and just be your authentic self every day. So supportive environments are super important.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And so it sounds like you all didn't have a mentorship or coaching program while you were in the school district. So I feel like some districts do and some districts don't, but I don't know how many focus specifically on Black teachers with Black mentors. And I've said this before on the podcast, when I was in the school district that I was teaching in, we had a mentorship program called STAR, and I was connected with a Black mentor, but I didn't realize until maybe like 5 years ago how rare it is to have a Black person connected with another Black person in that district. And so it made me think someone had to been behind the scenes aligning the stars, because had I not had her, I don't know where I would have been for that first year. She just gave so much insight and was super supportive of the work. I love that. I love this idea of these mentorship programs and really being considerate of the perspectives of Black folks who are going through teaching and not just connecting us with anyone, right? So that matching is so, so important. And that makes a lot of sense. And I know that folks are thinking, you know, they really focus on that retention piece. I mean, that recruitment piece, but that retention piece, that mentoring is a part of it. So when we get back, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about what you're doing now and all the things. I'm really excited to get, this is my favorite part. So I'm really excited to get there. And so when we get back, we'll dig into that. Hey there, beautiful people. It's me, Dr. Asia. Before we dive back into our conversation, Kev and I have something exciting to share with you. Are you a dedicated Black educator or support Black educators? Well, if so, we've got some great news for you. We're thrilled to introduce the latest addition to our podcast community, the Black Educator Be Well newsletter. It's a space dedicated to all things Black educator healing, wellness, and more. We believe that taking care of our Black educators is crucial, and this newsletter is designed to do just that. Picture this: exclusive insights into self-care practices tailored for Black educators, inspiring stories from fellow teachers who've overcome challenges, and tips for creating a positive and supportive environment at work and at home. Subscribers will get early access to our upcoming podcast episodes, special interviews with guests, and even some surprise giveaways. How do you become a part of this amazing community? It's easy. Go to exitinterviewpodcast.com or check out the link in this episode's show notes. Now let's get back to the conversation. Welcome back to another episode. We're in mid-break. We just got finished talking to Leah about all of her work as a social worker, her ideas around mentorship and there needs to be a matching of mentors for new educators and not just teachers, folks. We're talking about admin, paraprofessionals, and we talk about educators. So second part of the show, my favorite part, first things first, is there a Black educator that you would like to shout out who taught you, who is still in the district, maybe that you left or that you know now, that you'd like to just amplify their voice right here on this podcast while you have the chance?
Yes, there's two people that come to mind. One, I already mentioned, my past supervisor is super supportive, just always trying to elevate Black people in whichever way he can in the educational space. And then there's Darlene Sampson. I'm not sure if you've heard of her before, but wouldn't that be surprised?
Oh, yeah, she's been on our show.
Awesome. Yeah, so she's a Black worker. She's a great mentor. She was a great mentor for me. So I wasn't actually like paired with her, but I did get to meet her And she helped me a lot while I was at DPS. And I just appreciate her like authenticity and willingness to share her wisdom with me as a young Black professional. And she also supported and advocated for me strongly while I was pursuing my MSW degree. So I really appreciate her for that as well. Now she's working, I believe, at Metro State University, doing great things over there. But shout out to Darlene. I know she's mentored a lot of different Black women in DPS too. And it's had a pretty positive impact on many people's lives. So,
yeah, small world. Yeah, she came on the show in our first season. So like 2022, 2021, and shared her story about DPS and about just moving on. And I think she's doing a ton of consulting right now. That much I do know. I don't know if she's still at Metro, but she is doing some consulting. I just saw her recently. So, yeah, shout out to her because she has been, for a lot of people, a great mentor in the social work world and beyond. So I love that. Again, two full circle moments in the same podcast. Yeah. And so the next question is, you kind of got into this again. Tell us what you're doing now that you are no longer in a traditional teaching or education space.
Yeah. So now I'm a full-time single mom, and I also work as a grant manager with the Department of Local Affairs. I'm also working towards becoming a certified group fitness instructor because I really enjoy exercising and I want to help others maintain a healthy lifestyle. And I'm also working on growing my own podcast. I have a podcast called the Mamiana Podcast where I discuss everything related to motherhood since that's such a huge part of my life now. But yeah, check it out, folks. It's streaming on all platforms. That's really all I've been up to.
Yeah, that's a lot. Single mom, podcaster, certifications, working full time. Let me ask you a question that I know that people are curious to know. And you're talking about being a grant manager, which is so different than the work that you did before. Interestingly enough, my friend Rakisha was social work and then she went to grant management and then went back to direct services. But can you tell us, for those folks who are thinking about transitioning from maybe a social work space in a school to something outside of the education space, what that resume looked like? What was that experience like for you? Did you have to convince yourself that that was something that you could do? What was that process like for you?
Yeah, so it was something I've never done before, but I always felt like I was pretty good with numbers since I did work in the bank. But this is completely different than working in the bank, honestly. As far as resume goes, I always look at the job description and I try to align those keywords in the job description with what's written on my resume. That's just something I've always done. But honestly, I was really intimidated, to be honestly, to start this job because it was something I had never done, didn't have any knowledge of like how grants worked or anything like that. But I was able to come in and learn. And I had my friend there too, who had already been working, and she was like a huge, huge help for just helping me learn my job. Because I remember when I first started, I was like, what is going on? I am in these meetings. I don't know what they're talking about. It's completely different, like jargon. I have so much to learn. And I'm working with homeless individuals. The grant that I manage, we provide funding to local governments and nonprofits throughout the state to help address homelessness. So that was a new world for me as well, just learning all the different terms and jargon associated with homelessness. So there was a huge learning curve, but anything's possible. If you want to try something new, put yourself out there. And I would just encourage you to try it. Nothing that's worth something is going to be easy. You're going to have to put the work in. You're going to have to educate yourself. But accept that new challenge. If you've become burnt out from your job and you want to try something different, there's no reason for you to stay unhappy. There's a lot of different job opportunities out there. A lot of opportunities for you to just advance yourself and grow your skill set. And I'm so happy that I did that for myself.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. And you're right. It's the fear, right? Once we kind of get over that piece and accept that this is just where it's going to be, then we can lean into it a little bit more. And I know that there's so many folks who've been in education since they graduated from undergrad or whatever, and they've done it 20 years, 15 years, and it can be very intimidating to not move from school to school in a district, but into a totally different field where, yeah, obviously your skills can transfer, right? But it's not the same at all. Even the environment, like you said, you're in a meeting and you're thinking, I'm writing notes down, but nothing's registering, but I'm just going to try my best. But it works out, as we can see talking to you. It works out. I love that. Thank you for that. And then let's hear more about Mama Yana. I want to hear about how that came to be. Folks who are thinking about podcasting may be interested in that thought process. Please tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I really love podcasts. I've always listened to them. And I have been wanting to start one before I even became a mom. I always try to convince my friends, like, let's just like record our conversation. We could turn into a podcast. Nobody was ever down, unfortunately. But then when I became a mom, I was like, wow, this is like such a life change. I would like to create a space for other women, particularly Black women, to just come together and for us to share our different experiences and just to really support one another. So that's why I was created. Definitely trying to grow my audience around that. It's just me that's doing it. So having a podcast is a lot of work. It's a lot of work to market it, to have different guests come on, but I'm really enjoying that. And that's something that I definitely want to put a lot more of my time and effort and energy into.
Yeah. And we'll have information about your podcast in the show notes so folks can listen in. And you said it's on all platforms, Spotify and everything else, right?
Yes. I had a RSS feed going to this platform called Buzzsprout. And I actually just switched it over to the Urban Spectrum. They have like a platform for individuals who have Black people who have podcasts in the Denver metro area. So I just switched over to their RSS feed and I will share that with you for sure. I would love if you could put that at the bottom of your podcast for me.
Yeah. And folks, I want you to go out there. You're supporting this by listening to my podcast. Go out and support her podcast as well. It takes time and every listen, every download counts. So we just want to make sure to support Black women on our podcast, not just with finding work or their transitions, but also these adventures that may not necessarily pay, but are just fun. Just want to spread awareness. All right. Well, my last question, my favorite question, I always say they're all my favorite questions. My favorite question is, what's bringing you joy these days?
I'd say being a mother is really my greatest joy. I'd say it's the most challenging, yet the most rewarding job, though, in the whole universe, I'd say. So I really enjoy it. And I invest so much of my time and energy into my daughter. I just love her so deeply. So that's really something that's been bringing me joy. I'm thankful that I'm able to work remotely because I've been able to watch her grow and spend so much quality time with her and just really be her first teacher. It's been a blessing, seriously. So right now I'm just working towards, you know, reaching all of my goals and becoming the best mother that I can be. Really trying to grow that podcast, like I mentioned, and becoming that group fitness instructor. I've been traveling a lot more, which has been nice, me and my daughter. So that's been really fun as well. But really, I'm just trying to enjoy my life. You know, you only get one.
Really, I'm just trying to enjoy my life. You know, that's exactly right. I love that. Any place you would recommend people travel to that you've traveled to that you love?
Ooh, I think my most favorite place that I visited was probably South America. I went to Colombia. I went to Cartagena and Bogota. I really loved Cartagena. That's more like on the coast. Beautiful beaches, amazing food. And there were so many Black people there. I was like really amazed. I'd never been to South America before, but I was really impressed by that. I was like, wow, these are all Black people that speak Spanish. This is crazy. So I really love that. That's high. Recently, I just took a solo trip to San Diego by myself and stayed at a resort. That was really nice. San Diego is a beautiful place if you want to stay in state or in the States. But yeah.
Okay. All right, folks, get that passport. You don't have to be a teacher to travel in the summer, right? We love that. We have off in the summer. That's why I love being a teacher. We have spring break, but you can also have other jobs that involve you taking vacation. So don't let that be the reason that you feel like you have to stay in a place. All right, folks. So that was our episode. And if you have questions, we'll have all the information for Leah in the show notes. And we'll talk to you later. Peace. Thank you for tuning in to another episode. We hope that you've gained valuable perspectives and a deeper understanding of the conversation surrounding Black educator retention. As we conclude this episode, we encourage you to join our Patreon to support our work. Plus, as a patron, you receive bonus episodes, merch giveaways, and much more. Stay engaged with us on our social media, sign up for our newsletter in the show notes, take a look at our YouTube page, and interact with us on our website. Remember, the stories we've shared today are just the beginning, and your participation is vital for the future of education.